Hello, everybody. Is it a coincidence that 56 episodes into this project, we are now talking about vegan activist burnout? You are listening to Vegan Talk with me, Anthony.
And me, Carlos.
Welcome, everyone. Now, today, as we said in the intro, we are talking about when vegan activists burn out. And just for assurance, that intro was a joke. Well, you know, the podcast is not coming to an end, not burnt out yet. It's all good. Carlos, obviously, before we get into this any further, we need to clarify what we mean and what we understand the phrase burnout to mean, what it is and what it is not.
Yeah, so burnout is usually defined as being just a state of being in complete exhaustion. And this includes not just physical, but kind of emotional, and if you want to use that, mental and also kind of spiritual exhaustion, when you absolutely cannot do it anymore. And even though you might be willing to do something, you could just cannot do it anymore. And it's especially relevant for activists, because there's a lot of things, especially in the animal rights world, to feel this sense of burnout. And then the worst part is, I guess, you want to keep doing the animal rights activism, but it's like your body does not allow you to do it. So it's a feeling of, I would say, not just exhaustion, but a sense of hopelessness as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, do you think it's fair to say that, like, that doesn't necessarily mean that every negative moment or feeling that you might experience as a vegan or as an activist is necessarily a sign in and of itself of somebody going through burnout? It's possible to just have a bad day or kind of just need a quiet moment or something, isn't it? It's not necessarily a sign of something terrible. It's more the cumulative effect, perhaps.
Yes, and I would say it's this hopelessness and helplessness as well, that you feel you could just not do it anymore. And this, of course, to be I don't want to diminish anybody's mental health struggles, but this is something that kind of needs to carry across a period of time. So if you have a really bad day, and we've all had bad days doing animal rights activism, for example, you go and do outreach and you don't manage to have a single productive conversation. You're there in the cold for 5 hours, maybe it rains, people pass by and make fun of it. And, you know, you just get home and you think, oh, I'll never do it again. And then, of course, 2 days later, you're back at it. That's not burnout. That's just a bad day, and they're just kind of processing the bad day you had. Burnout would be like a much more prolonged. And usually we'll see a lot of this in animal rights activism, and I guess in other activism, when you see people quitting activism, people that seem to be dedicating their free time, their, you know, their spare money, you know, everything they could into animal rights activism, and then they suddenly disappear. You know, and you wonder how can somebody go from that dedication to nothing? And that's usually a sign of burnout.
Which there are, unfortunately, many, many, many examples of. Would you say, from your experience, Carlos, I'm trying to think of like my vegan journey, and there definitely was a point where I started hearing the phrase. And I don't know whether that was just because it was that time in history when people started talking about burnout a lot, or whether it was kind of I was doing specific activities or listening to certain sources of information that were talking about it. Is it something you've been aware of from the start of your vegan journey, or is it something that's come along later in your awareness in terms of just hearing about the subject?
I would say as soon as I started getting more involved with activism, it's when I started to hear about it. Before, not really. Sometimes talking with other vegans, of course, they would feel pretty annoyed that the world didn't follow their lead in becoming vegans and living in such a compassionate way. But I think with the package of being a vegan also comes this understanding that things will take time. And, we're still a minority within a minority. And in this case, I mean, like, let's say vegetarians, and then the vegans kind of being like a much smaller group within that. But no, I only really with animal rights kind of activism is when I started hearing about burnout, not just people who've made a personal choice. I think it's when you kind of make it a bit bigger than your own personal choice. So in that sense, when you bring in things you cannot control, which if you're trying to do activism, you're trying to influence other people and they're, you know, you cannot control them. And then I guess that's when the frustration comes in and the hopelessness comes in.
Yeah. There's a really interesting article that I found. It's a preprint that it says has not been peer reviewed yet. And I don't know whether that is still the case. We've got a link in the show notes for today's episode. It's got several authors and has been carried out at the University of Bath, by the looks of it. And there's some really interesting phrases. It's kind of written in quite an academic prose, so apologies if some of it sort of seems a bit highfalutin, but I'll just read some bits out of it. So yeah, they're saying moralized minority actors, so people who are in a minority with regards to a moral issue, that's my understanding of that, can play important roles in social change processes by rejecting majority social norms and modelling alternative societal pathways. So that clearly describes vegans. But it goes on to say, however, being a minority actor can be difficult, often resulting in stigma, derogation and hostility from the majority group. Again, clearly describing veganism. And for actions intrinsically linked with daily life, e.g. eating, such social obstacles might become so great that individuals acting alone experience activist burnout and social isolation and may stop pursuing social change altogether. And they go on to say they've actually based it on a case study at Vegan Campout. There's only 20 participants, is the only critique that really I'd have on it. But they're basically saying that mass gatherings help because you have experience for a short period being part of a majority and being part of a dominant community. But I mean, my biggest takeaway from that, Carlos, is that actually it's not just about being an activist in terms of how we would normally refer to being an activist. You could relate that to just being vegan itself, because it's describing things like, well, actually everyday actions such as eating can be difficult, and they could be so difficult because you're in a minority and the world's not changing that you could just give up and go back. I mean, would you see kind of like recidivism in veganism, so people going back on their veganism as a form of burnout potentially, depending on the reasons, I guess?
Yeah, it could be. You know, it's interesting, this study came out, even though obviously further research is needed, in that I've never heard people use that as an excuse to stop being vegan, in the sense that, oh, I want to join the majority again. I don't want to be in the minority. It's horrible to be the odd one out and to be singled out.
Do you think that's because people don't want to admit that, though, and kind of giving a reason like, oh, there just aren't many vegan options? Or, I mean, the Veganuary exit survey in 2023, God, I'm sounding like a nerd here, but the biggest reason people said that veganism was too hard for them was the lack of vegan options in restaurants. And I couldn't believe that, because like for me, compared to 15 years ago, there's so many vegan options in restaurants, but people gave that reason. But I reckon a big part of it is the fact that you're opting in to be a minority, which socially is difficult.
Yeah, and not just a minority. There's only less than 2% in the UK. Yeah. And I was expecting other countries, much less than 2%.
Yeah.
I would expect that to be the actual real reason. I mean, when people exit something, I never believe the reasons they give. I think they just have exited already and they just want to give a reason that makes them sound reasonable and that they can live with to the person they're talking to. I see the same, for example, with exit interviews in companies. When people leave a company, whether fired or of their own choosing, they usually have so why did you behave in this way? Why did you leave? You know, they're just trying to say something that will make them not lose face and just be not burn a bridge and maybe just exit gracefully and not create trouble, and saying, oh, there's not enough options. You know, I spent January being a vegan. There's not enough options. I would expect. Being part of a big group is not being part of a big group anymore is one of the big reasons for this.
Which can also lead to it in terms of like what we might call more traditional activism, because that's an even small subset, isn't it? You know, in that not every vegan even sort of takes part in traditional activism, or what we might deem activism, and so you're even more isolated in a sense, aren't you?
Yeah, there are a lot of, for example, where I live in London, there are lots of vegan activities, which you might think, why are these vegan activities that have nothing to do with the exploitation of animals? For example, vegan hikes. You know, imagining you were hiking with non-vegans, it would probably feel the same as hiking with vegans. Yeah. Vegan board games. Yeah, I'm sure that would feel the same with non-vegans as well. Vegan meditation classes, you know, I'm sure meditating with non-vegans feels roughly the same as meditating with vegans, especially because you keep your mouth shut anyway. and you're not eating while you're meditating. So, you know, it would feel the same. But I think it's this connection thing. It's this, you know, being in a peer group, in a group of your peers and feeling like you're not alone. I think this is really important. Every single person it seems like every vegan I talk to that I haven't met before, they say, oh, are you going to vegan camp out? Are you vegan camp out? And they all, this is like a meme in my life where they say, have you been to vegan? Oh, it was the best. It was the best month of, it was the best time I had last year was going to vegan camp out. And then I ask and I probe, was it the food? Was it the talks? And I said, no, just being there. Just being there. And I guess it's being in this place with thousands of other people and they're all in this, outside you're all a minority, there you're the majority.
I think one thing that makes it particularly difficult, that makes it more likely that somebody who's got a real passionate interest in social justice is liable to burnout, is the fact that there is that passion and it's really deep-seated and it's difficult as well. If you humor me for a moment, think of somebody who's really into supporting a football team or really likes watching a particular TV series, like a soap opera or something like that. They might be really passionate about that and they might be really dedicated to it and put a lot of their time and money into it, have lots of conversations about it. But it's not strenuous and it's not a sense of frustration. I mean, supporting certain football teams might be quite...
I was about to say that.
But in terms of those markers, in terms of time and passion and things like that, they're largely the same, maybe even more extreme. Who knows? But there is not necessarily the same sense of frustration or desperation to change the world. Like if you're supporting a football team, the chances are your team is not going to be the best in the world and you're kind of okay with that. Like even if you might not say it, deep down you know they're not going to be the best in the world. However, like if we're really, really passionate about a social justice issue like veganism, the thought of the world not being like that can cause you physical pain. You're so desperate for it to change. And therefore, a lot of us will put absolutely everything we possibly can into it, which is hard to sustain, isn't it?
Yeah. And you know, when we do our vegan week episodes, we talk about all the victories we've had for veganism, but those victories sit together with constant losing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we might say, oh, look, there's a meat processing plant that's closed down and it was not viable anymore. And now they're going to stop slaughtering, 5,000 chickens a day. I don't know if that's the figure. It's probably even more than 5,000. They're going to stop slaughtering 5,000 chickens a day. Yeah, big victory. But while this is going on, that's like a victory in the middle of, you know, of a sea of like a drop in the ocean of losses, which are happening every day as just business as usual. This is hard to make peace with. Extremely hard to make peace with.
Yeah. And I think that's why phrases like victory is used, isn't it? Because to feel like we are winning as a whole is difficult in a non-vegan world. But using language like, oh, well, that's a victory there. Oh, we've won a battle there. That's really helpful to kind of keep morale going, keep perspective and things like that.
Yeah. I mean, and celebrate the small wins, the victories we get. We need to celebrate them to understand that there's a momentum to this.
Yeah. What would you say before burnout becomes an issue? Like what from your experience, Carlos, are some good things to do to help prevent it in the first place?
Take a break. Mm-hmm. I had a sabbing season where I sabbed every single weekend and even tried to do some weekdays when I could because of work permitting. And by the end, I hated sabbing. I hated my team. I hated the Fox Hunters, obviously, but I already hated it before. But I hated like just the thought of sabbing. It's just too much. And I I should have paced myself. Ultimately, I should have paced myself. And of course, I guess with sabbing fox hunts, it's easy in a way because you only have those set months of the year. So it's like half a year of sabbing, half a year of not sabbing. So you can kind of rest. But most animal rights activism is just full on. You just, you know, you might shut down the zoo or the animal experiments lab, and then there's still a million things to do. So you just hop on to the next one. You might not even celebrate properly. So I would say taking a break. And if you've got like a good organization, a good team of activists, it will carry on without you. Yeah. If you need to take a week off, 2 weeks off, a month off, it should be able to carry off without you.
Just listening to what you're saying about sabbing, in a sense, I kind of almost imagine it might be harder to take a break with something like that, because if, let's say, you're describing a 6 month season, if you get 4 months in and you're thinking, gosh, I'm really starting to find this difficult, I'll take a couple months off. Well, actually, you take a couple months off and then the season stops for 6 months. Like, in a sense, like, I imagine, I don't know, you tell me, but like, there might be a pressure to just keep going. Come on, we're nearly there. We're nearly at the end of the season.
Yeah, but you can always take a weekend off, for example. Yeah.
It's definitely, well, from my experience, it's a lot easier with hindsight and having been stung with these things to make a good call on when to take a break and how to pace yourself. I think some of us have such a raw fervor to start with these things that we really go for it, hammer and tongs, and we're really wanting to put every little ounce of effort in, and it's not until we've experienced those feelings like you're describing, Carlos, of like, you know, feeling real antagonism to everyone around us or feeling real frustration that we realize that we have pushed it too far.
Yeah, but this is the longest of marathons, isn't it? This is going to take decades to do. So yeah, we need to pace ourselves, and it's better if all of us pace ourselves and keep ourselves in the movement for the next, I don't know, I don't want to speculate, but for the next 30, 40 years, then doing a lot for a year or two and then just being completely fed up with it and never coming back. So
yeah, and that is the case with when we talk to people about kind of dietary side of veganism. I think it's generally pretty well recognized that it is better for somebody to be 99.9% vegan over the course of their whole life than to get really hung up about, you know, a mistake here or there, whether intentional or unintentional, and then saying, oh, well, I can't do it then, and chuck the towel in. Like, I think that's quite common advice that people will give to other people, but we perhaps don't extend that same long-term view to ourselves with regards to activism. I think people tend to be a lot harsher to themselves and with themselves about their need to keep doing things. Oh, I mean, the number of people that I hear saying, oh, I just feel guilty that I'm not doing enough. I need to do more. And so sometimes I do think to myself, well, you probably could do a bit more. But a lot of people who say that are giving absolutely everything.
It's sort of the length of a piece of string, isn't it? How much you can do and how much you can give. But the fact is, you will hit the wall eventually. And it's far better to stop before you hit that wall, because that means you can keep going. I think most people are good at measuring when they feel that the burnout kind of starting to come. You know, that sense of weakness, I would say exhaustion, you know, just you just can't concentrate on things. I mean, and most of us have felt burnout for things, you know, related to study, you know, exams or maybe a challenging relationship or work, you know, and I felt burnout in those circumstances. So we, you know, for the activism, we can sort of feel it coming and just try to claw it back. It doesn't just need to be breaks or celebrating wins. You can also try to reconnect with the idea of why you're doing it in the first place. So I mentioned this on the last episode, but by the time this goes to air, it would have been 2 weeks. But I went over Easter, I went to the Hopefield Animal Sanctuary, and I just spent the day there, you know, just with those rescued animals. So of course they weren't free, completely free, but they were free within, you know, with the possibility of having an animal sanctuary, of course. But, you know, I still spent like an hour just looking at this fenced in area, quite big fenced in area for these, I think it was about 15 Vietnamese potbelly pigs. And they were just having fun in the mud and playing around with each other and, you know, rolling around in it and playing with the hay and whatnot. And, you know, instead of just looking at the bad videos of veganism and animals being tortured and abused, you can also, you know, try to think of the animals you're helping, you know, and trying to kind of prefigure the world in that way, you know, and think, well, we could live in a world where all animals live like this. Yeah. And, you know, just try to find some joy in what you're doing instead of just thinking of all the things you need to fix. Think about this bright future you're trying to get to and try to live in that future. Mm,
absolutely.
Spending time in nature, you know, like in a nature reserve where the animals are free and, you know, there's no kind of cages or anything. You just see, you know, the birds are free and you might see, you know, just deer in the natural environment. Yeah. Without no animal influence, no human influence. And, you know, just you could put a positive spin to it as well.
Yeah. I want to advocate for people taking regular short breaks or however works for you in things that are absolutely unrelated to veganism, animal rights, maybe even nature. I don't want to discourage people from going into nature because it's, you know, it's a wonderful free medicine that we all have access to, or almost all of us anyway. But actually that the benefit that it can give you to do something completely different, to talk to a completely different group of people about something completely different, exercise different muscles, practice different skills, that only increases your skills when it comes to returning to vegan advocacy. And it, as well as that, the chances of you meeting completely different people who maybe you can mention you're vegan and then you're exposing veganism to a completely different group of people too as well. That's a slight different bonus. And I'm sounding like I'm contradicting myself there because I'm saying take a break from it, but also keep mentioning it to people. But I mean, I do residential summer camps with children. I volunteer at folk festivals. Like I do things other than veganism that they're nothing to do with it. And I pick up things there, experiences and skills that then make me, I believe anyway, a stronger vegan activist. And it's just that thing, isn't it, of kind of having a bit of a cleanse or a breath of fresh air from something. Often you then return to it with renewed vigor and enthusiasm. And I have to say, and I say this with love and not sort of character assassinating judgment, I have met a few vegan activists over the years who give absolutely every minute of their lives towards it, and what incredible dedication that is. But they're often quite unrelatable people. They can be quite boring to talk to, and they don't have other frames of reference away from veganism that they can use in their advocacy. And to my mind, that's a shame. That's missing a trick. Like I say, I'm certainly not criticizing anybody's sentiments and motivations there. That's incredible that someone's wanting to give every minute of their life towards veganism. But I think mixing it up, as well as giving you a mental break from all of the horror of living in a non-vegan world, I think it does give you different skills and outlooks as well. And that's to the animal's benefit, I think, in the end.
Yeah. And also it's important to have examples of vegans that are happy.
Yeah,
you know what
yeah.
I mean? Because we were talking about groups and creating a group that's attractive to be part of that group. And we want veganism to be an attractive group for people to want to be part. We don't want to just be angry and burnt out and lashing out at all times, you know. Certainly there are times when we need to be, you know, steadfast in our convictions and confrontational and kind of pursue the things we believe in. But other times we should allow ourselves to be, you know, kind and compassionate and open to people, even if they're non-vegans, because by that way we create this vegan personality that people want to be part of.
Mm, yeah.
So they'll want to be vegans and happy within themselves, people happy within themselves and part of a group that's functional, not a group that's kind of constantly being burned out because of all the losses and the sheer cruelty in the world and kind of always angry.
Yeah.
That's not an attractive group to be part
of. No, not many people opt into martyrdom, do they really? It's not a particularly attractive prospect. I mean, I think it's fair to say, like, we've both experienced elements of burnout ourselves. You've mentioned something at the top of the show, Carlos. I've definitely experienced it. And I guess we'll both have met other people who've had times where they've completely become dejected or taken a step away from things and possibly not to return. We've talked a lot about how to avoid or lessen the impact of burnout. But if and when it does happen, because, you know, we're not all perfect and we will make naive choices that lead to burnout, what do we think are the best things to do to help somebody that's going through that, both for themselves and, you know, maybe hopefully one day for them to return to being able to advocate for animals again?
Well, I've already talked about a few things to kind of keep going, you know, like celebrating and trying to connect with other vegans, even if they're not activists. But I'm just going to say something which perhaps is not mentioned that often, is that you can always come back as an activist working on another aspect of animal rights. Mm. Because you might just be fed up of the one you've been doing, obviously we're all working towards the same goal, which is animal freedom and respect, but there might be just the way you go about your advocacy that you're burnt out with. So you might be burnt out of outreach. And then you say, well, I'm just tired of talking to all these cruel people. They don't realize how cruel they are. They keep telling me these stupid arguments about plants having feelings, and I can't with this anymore. And then from my experience, you join a SAP group, and then you pretty much don't talk to any non-vegans during your SABing. You just go into the countryside and you run a lot, and it's a completely different thing. Mm-hmm. So the way you were burnt out before doesn't happen, because the shape of animal rights activism is completely different. Or I'll give a completely different example. Maybe you're tired of talking to people, you're tired of chasing fox hunters on horseback and hounds. So you decide, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to read all this literature about successful social movements for change, and I'm going to try to learn what we can apply to animal rights activism, and then share that back with the community. Mm-hmm. See, that's something completely, you don't talk to anybody in the beginning, you're just reading, taking notes, trying to relate to animal rights activism in your country and how you can use that. Or maybe you have skills in law, so you're reading laws and things, well, how can we apply this to give animals personhood, for example? You know, what sort of arguments could we use for that? You know, so there are multiple, animal rights activism is a very broad spectrum, and you might just be burned out from that very specific way you've been doing animal rights activism.
That's such a good shout. Yeah, that's such a good shout. And like you say, it's such a broad church, so many different ways of expressing that desire in a way that can make it a bit more sustainable. I just want to speak to as well, to finish off, the accompaniment of people. We know from what we've learned from neurology in recent years, that actually people feeling like they are being accompanied by others in what they're going through and feeling that empathy is massive in terms of people feeling safe, people feeling okay. And actually, I think the first step, and arguably the most important step for somebody who is experiencing burnout, is not to be persuaded to do something else or to get back on the horse, to use a non-vegan phrase, but is actually just to listen to them and to hear what they've gone through and to validate it. Because actually the only reason that burnout has happened has been because of somebody's really strong passion for sentient beings who are not themselves. They're thinking about other people and other beings, and that's an admirable thing. And to end up in a position where you are, you know, a burnt out husk of a human and mentally exhausted because of your efforts, that's somebody that needs real sympathy and real comfort and validation, and they don't need any kind of persuasion to be starting up again straight away. They just need to feel some sympathy and to be heard. And I think if that happens, then yes, they hopefully they will by themselves then at some point in the not too distant future want to start advocating for animals again, either in the same way as they were before, or like you say, Carlos, there are so many different ways of expressing that. But I think we can all just lend people our ears, and that goes an awful long way and doesn't require a lot of skill. You just have to know when to shut up, really. Okay, let's wind things up now. We've just passed the half an hour mark, which is a good point to stop. please, listeners, do send us your thoughts on this one. I would be astounded if the vast majority of you hadn't come across somebody who had experienced burnout, or perhaps you've felt feelings like it yourself. And the more, as a community, we can share our experiences of that, the more resilient we will be to it. You know how to get hold of us. It is enoughofthefalafel@gmail.com. Don't bother sending us social media messages. I've not been using those accounts for a long time now, so I'm not overworking myself. So yeah, just on the emails for the time being, please.
Thanks very much for listening. And remember that we have an extensive back catalog. Before we burned out. But we have an extensive back catalog, which we do sustainably. And of course, we have other shows than just Vegan Talk.
Absolutely. Now, if you are listening to this in a timely fashion, i.e. around about the, what will it be, the 11th of April, then in a couple of days' time on Monday, there is going to be our next episode of Vegan Week. And we are joined by Dominic, who's joined us a few times recently, but also Nazia, who is joining us for the first time since January. So we're really excited to hear from both of those, looking at the week's vegan and animal rights news with myself. Anyway, that is enough of the falafel for this episode. I've been Anthony.
And I've been Carlos, and you've been listening to Vegan Talk from Enough of the Falafel.